Hi, I'm Alex Bellinger, and this is Small Biz Pod on Monday, the 20th of July. Well, I hope you're all well, and not too many of you have gone down with the dreaded swine flu yet. It seems to be sweeping around the world and certainly around the UK quite rapidly at the moment. But in today's episode of the podcast, I've got an intriguing, interesting insight into creativity for business in relation to entrepreneurs, startups, small business owners, because I talked to a fascinating character and one of the world's most renowned thinkers on the subject of creativity and indeed of on the subject of creative thinking, and that is Edward de Bono. And also in this episode of the podcast, I got a really excellent excellent book review. And I always say this every time we get a new book review, but the quality really, really, it just gets better and better. And I'm really seriously impressed with the effort and insight and sheer good judgment that you guys out there have in terms of the business books that I send out. This review is from the mysterious Uncle Spats, who you may well hear more of in the future, but really good book review. Definitely well worth listening to that too. And it's interestingly a review of a book from an author whose second book it is to appear as a listener review. So there we are, a first on our book review segment. If you want to review a book, just send me an email at alex@smallbizpod.co.uk. You can review a book that I send you, so I'll send you a business book that's sitting on my desk that I haven't had a chance to read. Or, of course, if you've read a good book, a good business book that you think other listeners would be interested in, then just by all means review that. Save you having to read something that I send you. So that's a possibility too. But just email me alex@smallbizpod.co.uk to check first. Okay, other than a very chilled, ambient, relaxing, summery tune at the end of the podcast, I just wanted to say a really big thank you to this month's sponsors of Small Biz Pod, and that is Dell Computers. And I have to say, when you're looking to get the most from your computers and laptops, whether it's, you know, mobility, productivity gains, reliability, support, or basically just great value for money at a time when every penny counts, then you really ought to go and check out what Dell has to offer. They've really got some cracking laptops dedicated to or designed specifically for small businesses, the Vostro range. And I'm a real fan of the new netbooks. So the Dell Minis are really, really superb and actually really very cheap. So if you need that little extra laptop to go out when you're traveling around and to use and to attach to a Wi-Fi, or sometimes they've got built-in 3G, that's certainly well worth checking. So head over to smallbizpod.co.uk/Dell offers to check out the latest offers from Dell, or just simply click on one of the banner ads on the site at smallbizpod.co.uk. So thanks to Dell. And now let's just go straight into that interview with one of the world's great thinkers, Edward de Bono. Okay, well, one of the things that Small Biz Pod has always prided itself on is listening to its listeners. And over the last few months, a number of listeners have contacted us and said, why not do something on creativity in business, both in terms of interviewing people who run creative businesses, but also in terms of creative thought in businesses, in business and in startups. So, ever attentive to the dear listener here, when an opportunity came up to interview the guest on today's episode of the podcast, it was sort of too good to miss. And I'm very pleased to be able to welcome to Small Biz Pod today one of the world's renowned thinkers, I guess, on the subject of creativity and on the subject of thinking as well. And I'm hoping that we will explore some very practical sides of how to think creatively within your business, but also explore some of the more major themes around creativity and perception, linked to a new book, which Dr. Edward de Bono has written. So, Edward, welcome to Small Biz Pod.
Thank you.
Now, I have been familiar with the concept that of your thinking, as it were, for some time, but I admit to not having read any of your books until now, and think is very much a useful guide outlining a number of your sort of key themes and concepts and ideas on thinking over the last many years. I guess listeners will be familiar with lateral thinking. They'll be familiar with the six hats concept. For those who haven't come across you before, and there will probably be a few, how would you describe yourself?
Well, I'm a thinker. Now, the interesting point about that is booksellers, bookshops say to me, where do we put your books? Do we put them on the business? Do we put them on the education? Do we put them on the comedy? Where do we put them? Because there isn't a shelf called thinking. Yeah. And universities don't have a faculty called thinking, and schools don't have a subject called thinking. And yet thinking is by far the most important human skill or quality, totally neglected. That's quite extraordinary. And for 2,400 years, we've done virtually nothing about human thinking. There probably are about 50,000 people around the world writing software for computers. With regard to software for the human brain, we've done nothing for 2,400 years. So thinker is how I would describe myself, or designer of thinking.
But you're also you've also created some really practical tools. And what I like about this particular book, and what I like about your thinking, is that it does two things which I think entrepreneurs and startups and smaller businesses do naturally, which may get lost as businesses become bigger and grow and more dinosaur-like. And that is, you focus on yes, the idea, but also creativity and, importantly, value. The value, producing value, and obviously entrepreneurs want value, they want a profit, but they're social entrepreneurs, for example, will go, you know, into values of a slightly different kind. Yes. Explain a little bit about the value of value in your thinking, as it were.
Yes, well, the present book is called Thinking Before It's Too Late. That's about the very basis of our thinking and how we're complacent with our judgment-based thinking. We've developed very good thinking for finding the truth, but never developed thinking for creating value. And to be sure, individuals have, inventors, entrepreneurs, but as a culture, never. Now, value is very key. Any objective is a package of value. If you say, I want to climb to Everest, you say, okay, now what is the value? I want to prove it to myself, I want to show off to others, and so on. All the different values. Value is very, very key. And the purpose of design is putting together what we have to deliver the value we want. And again, design is totally absent from education, schools, and so on. And yet it's equally important to analysis. Analysis is analyzing something to pick out standard situations for which you provide the standard reply. That's fine, nothing wrong with that, but that's not good enough. We also need to create value. Now, I did write a book, Six Value Medals, as well, six different types of value. Value for the individual, for the organization, for ecology, perceptual, all the different sorts of value.
Yep.
But value is very key, and the thinking needed to create value is different from the thinking needed to judge.
Yeah, absolutely. Because judgment implies, if you make a judgment on an idea, for example, it kills it.
Well, judgment on an idea is based on our own experience and how that a new idea fits the experience and doesn't look forward into the future of what the idea may do to change the situation. So, yes, we're too ready to reject ideas rather than saying, okay, maybe there's something in it. Let's develop. Let's take it further. Let's see how we can do it. In other words, to explore the possibility of ideas rather than rush to say, no, I can't be bothered with that. You see, the trouble with most, executives, not necessarily entrepreneurs, is they feel their job is continuity and problem solving. Keep things going as they're going and solve the problems that arise. And that's very, very limiting. Give an example. There was a fellow in Argentina, ran a small textile company. On his own, he took stuff from my books and taught that to all his employees. At that time, he was half the size of his nearest competitor. 5 years later, he's four times the size of his nearest competitor, just through teaching his workers thinking and getting them to think. Better ways of doing things, simpler ways of doing things, new things to do, and so on.
Mm. Absolutely. And you say at one point in the book, new ideas means disruption, risk, hassle, and bother.
Yes.
And actually, for an entrepreneur, for a startup, for a new business, that's exactly what they're striving for.
Yes, that's quite true. They want to be different from a competitor, different from anything else, create new value. That's exactly true. And entrepreneurs on the whole do see the need for new ideas. What happens a bit later, when the idea is successful, sometimes they get trapped by it. Now, interestingly, there's a famous quotation by George Santayana, which says, if you don't learn from the mistakes of the past, you're condemned to repeat them, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, yes, if you learn from the successes of the past, you're doomed to be trapped by them, just as true.
Yeah.
In other words, it worked before, therefore it's enough just to do it again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So let's think about, you know, an entrepreneur may have an idea, but it may be difficult to sort of move it on or to build that the creative thinking which may be instinctive to that individual inside the team that he creates in order to execute that idea. Explain a little bit the basic concepts behind lateral thinking for those who perhaps might not have come across it, and how it can generate ideas and move the business or move anything forwards.
Well, the base that the brain is designed and is excellent at forming patterns. If it wasn't for that, you couldn't get up in the morning, let alone cross the road, read, write, or do anything.
Mm.
Brain's designed to make patterns. Patterns are like established main roads along which we go. And moving across patterns to open up other patterns, which are logical in hindsight, that is what lateral thinking is all about. And mathematicians, physicists, fully in my favor, say, yes, what you're talking about is perfectly correct.
Yeah.
Now, we need ways of doing it. There are ways like provocation, where you say something which may sound very strange, and yet you follow it through, you get a logical answer. Like, one time I was talking to the California Ecology Department,
mm-hmm.
and they said, we have a problem with factories, build a factory on the river, put out pollution, people downstream suffer. So the provocation, and I invented the word Poe, which means provocative operation,
mm-hmm.
I said, Poe, the factory should be downstream of itself. Sounds absolutely illogical. How can a factory be downstream of itself? From it comes a very simple idea, very logical in hindsight. We legislate that if you build on a factory, your input has to be downstream of your own output, so you're the first to get your pollution.
Yeah.
That's now become legislation in 13 countries.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Very logical.
Now, the other thing which I found, which I think is a very useful way of understanding this this kind of jump out of literal thinking, as it were, the literal path into the lateral, is jokes and humour, which I have to say was surprising to me as an example.
Humour is not so much a tool. Humour is an illustration of how the mind can jump patterns. The one I always use is this old man of 90 does go down to hell. He sees a friend of his, also age 90, sitting there with a beautiful young lady sitting on his knee. So he says to his friend, he says, are you sure this is hell? Because you seem to be having rather a good time. The fellow looks up and says, no, he said, it's hell, all right. He said, I'm the punishment for her. That's totally logical once you've made the jump.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And go on.
One of the problems with creativity over the centuries has been that any valuable logical or any valuable creative idea will always be logical in hindsight. So logicians have said, no, you don't need creativity. You could have got it by logic. The answer is no. And that's why we haven't really developed creativity seriously.
Because we're stuck in ultimately the Greek way of thinking, as
the
it were.
Judgment-based, yes.
Yeah.
In this box, not in this box, and so on, yes.
Yeah. Now, you talk about the three G's, I think, the three Greeks.
Well, the Greek Gang of Three.
Yeah.
And Greek Gang of Three, of course, were Socrates, his interest in questions and argument, Plato in the truth, and Aristotle in his box-type logic.
Yeah.
For example, Aristotle was married twice, but he never asked his wives to open their mouth to count their teeth. He insisted that men had more teeth in their mouth than did women, so he didn't need to ask his wives to open their mouth. Because with horses, apparently, the stallion has more teeth than the mare. So Aristotle established a box. The male of the species has more teeth than the female. Therefore, he had more teeth than his wives. and that was better than counting. And of course, he was totally wrong.
Yeah.
But that's sort of box logic. You're in this box, this category, not out, either in or out. You can't be halfway. And that's the logic we use.
Yeah. Now, obviously, the other point you make in the book is that the church, which requires logic, requires that argumentative dialectic in order to establish what is right and what is wrong, I suppose,
that's
ultimately.
Right. Well, what happened when Greek thinking came to Europe, and Greek thinking was pretty bad in itself, but when it came to Europe in the Renaissance, schools, universities, thinking were in the hands of the church. They did not need creative thinking or design thinking or perceptual thinking. What they did need was truth, logic, and argument to prove heretics wrong. So the whole Western culture of thinking was based on that truth, logic, and argument, which is good for finding the truth, and we've done well in science. But we've never really developed education, culture, thinking for creating value.
Yeah.
And to be sure, there are individuals who have, but as a culture, we've never done it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say, I guess some people would consider it to be controversially in the book, that there's been no, until now, there's been no progress in terms of thinking for 2,400 years.
Absolutely. And the reason is complacency, that because we've done well in science, and we have, we can land people on the moon, we can have internet going around the world, we can cure many diseases. Because we've done well in science, we say we must have excellent thinking. But the answer is in human affairs, you know, petty conflicts, human condition, poverty, we've done very, very poorly.
Yeah, and that is because of the way we think about
about
issues, which kind of brings us on a little bit to another practice, some other practical examples. There's the six hats, which is a way, a very useful way and a very practical way of looking at things in a non-confrontational manner.
Exactly.
Just again, I mean, for some this will be familiar ground, for others it'll be new ground. Just explain briefly six hats.
Basically, I think arguments started in Greece, upper middle class Greeks who didn't have to work after lunch. They wanted a way of occupying the afternoon and a way of proving themselves smarter than their neighbors. So they invented argument.
Yes.
Now, it's very poor method. It's all negative, all attack, fixed position, no design, too much ego, and so on. Parallel thinking, six hats, means at any moment everyone in the group is wearing the same hat, meaning thinking in the same direction. The white hat, everyone's looking at information. The red hat, you're free to express your emotions, intuition, prejudices, whatever you like, without having to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
The black hat is critical, risk assessment, downside, possible problems. The yellow hat is values, benefits, and how to do it. The green hat is creativity, new ideas, alternatives. And the blue hat is like the orchestra conductor, the organizing, setting the sequence, designing the output, and so on. Now, last year, I was told by a Nobel Prize economist, he said, last week I was in Washington, he was in Washington, at the top economics meeting in the United States, he said, they're using the six hats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's used widely in business. One a company in Finland used to spend 30 days in their multinational project discussions using the hats they do in 2 days. J.P. Morgan in Europe said they've reduced their meeting times to one-tenth. IBM at the top research laboratory in South Carolina said they reduced meeting time to one quarter.
Mm.
Juries in the United States are starting to use it, and they reach unanimous decisions very quickly. Argument is an extremely primitive and crude way of exploring a subject. The six hats parallel thinking means everyone is using their brain fully, not to prove someone wrong, but to explore the subject.
Yeah, and it's that exploration that yields a more creative approach and some ideas.
If you have to get from town A to town B, and you get a better and better and better roadmap, in the end you say, well, that's obviously the road we take.
Yeah.
You know, once you've explored it, the route forward becomes obvious.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there's an interesting sort of leitmotif, for want of a better word, in the book, a phrase that keeps on repeating and coming back, and it just reminded me of something Alexander Pope coined. I think it was Alexander Pope anyway, said coined a very famous aphorism about damning with faint praise. You use this phrase, excellent but not enough, which to me is kind of like damning with strong praise.
The reason is there's a huge need for that expression. Why? Because if you want to change something and you're supposed to attack it and say it's bad, you must change it.
Yeah.
First of all, that's very unfair because it may not be bad. And you may spend all your time trying to prove it bad when you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you need to say, it is excellent, but it's not enough. Yep. The rear left wheel of a motor car is excellent, but it's not enough. A chef who cooks the most beautiful, perfect omelette in the world, that's excellent, but not enough.
Yeah.
Our traditional thinking is excellent, but not enough. So there are many situations where the word is ebne, excellent, but not enough. There's a real need for it to say to someone, yes, what you're doing is excellent, but it's not enough. Now, not enough is not just in the sense you can improve more, but that may be an alternative. It may be something you need to do as well as that.
Yeah. But I mean, you term it as being not bad, but seriously inadequate.
No, I really mean it may really be excellent, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
Inadequate is, of course, not enough is another word for inadequate. But it, meaning that, yes, if, for instance, a painter, and you said, look, here's the most beautiful blue color, and there's no way he could say that's a bad blue color. He'd say, yes, but that's not enough. I need a red or a yellow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the point.
Okay, so it's striving for perfection, getting those last 5% of the 95.
Well, saying that things in the situation, we need things as well.
Yeah.
If you said to a carpenter, all you can use is a hammer, he can't say the hammer's bad. He can say it's excellent, but it's not enough. I need a saw as well.
Yeah. Now, design. Let's just quickly just touch on design thinking, because I think this is
design.
An important theme in the book.
Very key.
Yeah.
Very key. Design is putting together what you have to deliver the values you want. Now, design is as important as analysis, but it's totally absent in education. School is all about knowledge and analysis. University is all about knowledge and analysis. And yet, when you get out in the real world, design is important. Now, I used to run an education magazine, a little competition for design for very young children, 6, 5, 6, 7, and I'd get them to draw something. So one time I asked them to draw a dog exercising machine. Now, almost all of them, 90%, would draw a sort of treadmill with a bone at the end to motivate the dog, and the dog's running against the direction of the treadmill.
Yeah.
This youngster, age 4, maybe 5, had a different idea. His dog was towing by means of a string harness, a little trolley on which there was a car battery from which protruded an electrified prong that if the dog stops, the trolley would run into it and make him go again.
Yes.
Everyone else was trying to make the dog exercise. This kid said, no, let's prevent him stopping.
Yeah.
And they would come up with excellent concepts. Design is a key part of life. Without design, all we're going to do is standard situations, standard answers.
Now, In a business, and particularly in a startup business, there are those who say we need business planning. Is what we really need business design? When we're planning a business, are we actually designing a business?
Well, the answer is it design should be there. I dare say if you're saying putting anything down on paper, you'd call it design. But design is what you have, what the resources, what the market is, how you achieve the values you want. Yes, design is key. Unfortunately, in the English language, when we think of creativity, people think of artistic effort. When we think of design, we think only of graphic design.
Yeah.
But design is very fundamental. It means putting together what you have to deliver the values you want.
Okay. And creativity, in the context in which this whole conversation has been, is creativity of ideas, not creativity of finger painting or Jackson Pollock.
In the art world, that section of the art world which has shown the most interest of my work is music.
Yes.
Both classic music, rock music, people like the Pet Shop Boys, Eurythmics, Peter Gabriel, all use my work. And the answer is that in music, you're not representing anything. You're starting from scratch.
Yeah.
Painting, you might be painting a landscape or a person and so on. But music, it's all from scratch. So you need provocation. You need creativity very much.
Brian Eno has cards. Are those based on your thinking?
I don't know. I met him not so long ago. But yes. I met him in Sydney, actually. Yes.
Yeah, no, he has some, I can't remember the name of them, but he has some quite famous cards that are used when musicians are stuck in the studio and they don't know what an idea.
It could well be. It is kind of
that disruptive challenge.
Yeah, it could well be sort of provocation.
Yes,
or random input, yes.
Yeah,
it
exactly.
Could well be, yes.
Now, there's one thing that in reading your book that struck me. I mean, it was kind of a revelation because I hadn't understood the detail of the concepts that I was aware of, as it were.
Yes.
So that was revelatory. But it was also very interesting that you get a good idea of you too, which I found interesting. And also, there's this issue of the brain getting into sort of self-organizing patterns, which are kind of hard to jump out of, which is kind of where the creativity comes when you jump out of that pattern.
That's right. Well, you see, interestingly, when I talk about provocation, which may sound really strange, like a factory being downstream of itself, a plane landing upside down, classic philosophers, logicians, just can't understand it. They say, if this is a daft idea, how can you move anywhere interesting? But mathematicians fully understand it. They say in any self-organizing system, you reach what's called a local equilibrium, and unless you use provocation, you will never get to the global equilibrium. So they understand it fully. And the provocation is using a provocative idea and then using a mental operation called movement to move on to a useful idea.
Can you give an example of how that might work practically? Just so, because I sometimes think people will listen to this and it'll be sound conceptual.
Well, I'll give an example. There's a fellow in Canada and is running, I think it was Prudential Insurance. He's a big follower of my work. And in fact, he had the six hats woven into the carpets throughout the headquarters.
All right.
So he's looking at life insurance. So one day he says, Poe, you die before you die. Now that sounds pretty impossible. How can you die before you die?
Yeah.
But from that came the idea that if you got a serious illness, the insurance company would pay out 75% of the death benefits immediately. The other 25% when you did die.
Yeah.
That's called living needs benefits. Has been extremely popular. It's now used by most insurance companies in America. Because now you have money to pay for hospital and final care and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And that was a provocation, changing an idea which had been the same for 123 years.
Yeah, that's a really good example. I mean, it helps really make it concrete.
Yes, his name was Ron Barber. I wouldn't want to take credit from his idea. Ron Barber was his name.
Yeah. Oh, fascinating. In your own thinking, to some extent, you know, you've been talking about the same issues and the same ideas for a long while. Do you feel occasionally you've created your own channels which you need to leap out of?
Let's put it this way. I've been thinking and writing about thinking for 40 years.
Yeah.
Thinking is a huge subject. There probably are five times as many books on fishing or sailing as I've done on thinking, or playing golf.
Yes, you're right.
So there's a huge amount to discover. I mean, there's a whole new area I'm working on, a totally different sort of logic from the one we use today. There's a massive amount to do. I mean, I've been looking at creative thinking, parallel thinking, perceptual thinking. There's a lot more to do, a lot more software for human thinking.
Yeah. Is there anything that, are there any of your ideas that over the last 40 years you've changed your mind about?
The answer is no. Things have got more in detail and stronger and so on, but nothing I would say, no, going back, I would not have said that or I would change that, no.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And there's several interesting points in the book about recognition, both in terms of the recognition that governments and individuals give to thinking. Do you feel in any way kind of under-recognized?
Well, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, if you play golf or rugby or sing a song and so on, you get some recognition. If you work at thinking, which is by far the most vital human quality and ingredient, then, you don't get recognition.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think because, you see, there's two aspects to it. One is a lot of this recognition is vote-getting. In other words, if we recognize someone who's popular, then we get votes because we become popular too. The other is people are recommended often by their peer group, and therefore you need a peer group who are into some activity or something to recommend you. But in thinking, you're pretty much on your own.
But of course, the tools potentially can have a massive impact on a whole.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'll give you an example. In conflicts, world level, we rush to judge, not to design the way forward. If we take the quite recent Gaza and Israel and all that stuff, what I would do, designing the way forward, I'd say that all the countries which set up Israel in the first place should jointly contribute a donation of $3 billion a year to the Palestinians. But every time they fired a rocket into Israel, they lose 50 million. In other words, you design the way forward.
Yeah.
And I was not saying, okay, we're going to bomb the hell out of you and so on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in some ways, you think I wish it were that simple, and simplicity is another theme.
It is. You see, some years ago, I tried to set up the United Nations, a creative group to provide alternative possibilities and so on. Impossible. They said, we're not here to think, we're here to represent our countries, not to think. So one of the big projects I have is to set up a palace of thinking somewhere in the world, which really would be a platform for new ideas from any source, and would also hold periodic meetings, creative meetings, looking at world issues and world problems. There's a huge need for it.
Yeah. You say in the book, I would claim to have done more about idea creativity than anyone else in human history. Now,
yes.
That may well be true, but it sounds kind of, you think, it takes you aback a little bit. Do you think that's maybe over-egging the pudding?
Well, yes, of course, I agree with that. But the point is, it does need saying. It does need saying. You see, the point, going back to something you said earlier on, I'm talking about operational thinking. In other words, how you do things, how you make things happen.
Yeah.
Almost all psychologists and philosophers talk about descriptive thinking, saying, oh, you're doing this, let's put a name to it, you're doing this, and so on. That's not operational.
Yeah.
Operational means, for instance, using the random word technique. One workshop in South Africa for a steel company, ISCO, generated 21,000 new ideas in one afternoon. Now, that's very operational.
No, absolutely. And I think this ties back to kind of round off the interview. This comes back to why I think you're I know you don't like the term philosopher, but you're kind of because you don't see yourself as one. But you're.
I think what happened is, no, this is very serious. What happened is, because philosophy existed, we have believed for 2,400 years that there were people looking at practical operational thinking, and the answer is there weren't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so nothing else was done about it because it was assumed that that was what philosophy was doing, but it wasn't.
Mm. And to that extent, I mean, I think you say that there's a very nice adaptation of the Descartes quote at the end of the book, which really comes back to the entrepreneurial and the fact that entrepreneurs act and have vision. And that is, you say, I act, therefore I construct, argo, ergo, erigo, which is
that's
nice.
That's right. Now, I sent that to President Chirac when he was President of France. I didn't get a reply.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but for France.
He liked Descartes being challenged.
Oh, of course. Like. No, that's probably, no, indeed. But I think that that's a very sort of appropriate conclusion, because it's kind of the epitome of what startups and what entrepreneurs are about and the way they think.
Absolutely. And I think that sort of thinking, innovation, entrepreneurship, very key. And I'd like to see schools and so on in encouraging that attitude.
Yeah. And I know that you were at one point a chairman of Young
Enterprise Europe.
Yes. Right now, with the massive kind of disruptions in the financial markets and the huge sort of uncertainty around kind of capitalist certainties, a lot of people see enterprise or entrepreneurs and social entrepreneurs potentially in particular as a way out, as a solution, as the people who are going to come up with creative ideas effect change. What's your view of that?
I would agree with that. I'd agree with that. And I think we also need some creative ideas on the future of banking, too.
Yes. I think that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Edward Bono, thanks ever so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
So there we are. I'd really encourage you to check out Edward Bono's latest book. It's called Think Before It's Too Late. A lot of really practical summaries of the very practical advice that and thinking that Edward has put in on the subject of creative thinking over the last 40 years. The six hats, lateral thinking, all really good stuff that can help generate new ideas for your business and help you in meetings and just be more efficient and creative in the way you think, which is always good in business for any entrepreneur. So do check that out. Talking of books now, let's go straight into a book review of Ian Sander's second book, which is called Juggle, and this review by the mysterious Uncle Spats.
Hi, I'm Uncle Spats. Alex has asked me to review a book for him called Juggle, which is written by Ian Sanders. So what's it all about? Well, the principle of Juggle is to help the reader change from a 9-to-5 single job title corporate type mindset to becoming a more multi-dimensional person, perhaps to have a range of job functions and to mix up work and play. The idea is that you find ways to make enough money from doing things that you really enjoy and thereby really enjoy life to the full. So why might this be important? Well, it would seem that the term job security is really becoming more and more of a distant memory. I know from my own experience and that of my circle of friends and acquaintances that no one's immune from redundancy or having contracts renewed. Strategic direction can change in the blink of an eye, leaving a trail of HR destruction in its wake. Also, more and more of us, I think particularly when we reach a certain age, are getting increasingly dissatisfied with corporate life. It seems that every job places high demands on our time and can make it very hard to achieve that elusive work-life balance. So how does Ian go about addressing these issues? Well, it's quite a lively, fast-paced book with relatively short chapters and thankfully without the excess padding and repetition you get in many books these days. He starts by talking about their four-letter word, work. If we're not enjoying it or not doing it at all, then maybe we have a problem. His hypothesis is that we need to rethink work, to make it more of an extension of our personality, to redefine it so it isn't about a job title, a salary, the benefits package, but more about freedom, enjoying flexibility, and having the lifestyle that we really want. The solution proposed is to juggle, a number of different projects in order to earn a reasonable living. Now, the principles reminded me of some of Charles Handy's work from a few years ago about having a portfolio career. I think with current technology enabling any time, anywhere working, this seems to be more of a possibility for more people today. Now, Ian suggests that there are three essential ingredients to becoming a successful juggler. It's courage, confidence, and talent. Now, a book won't help with a third of those, but it might provide some inspiration to develop a bit more of a courageous attitude and build some confidence. Now, the book is divided into three sections. First on the rethinking work, challenging some of our assumptions and accepted thinking, and then on to designing or perhaps redesigning our lifestyle. And the final section is about describing some of the tactics you can employ to become a juggler. In the first section on rethinking work, he explores things such as change and specialism versus generalism and the link between productivity and hours worked and the whole work-life balance issue. For a number of people, and for me personally, as someone who's worked from home a fair bit over the years, much of this actually isn't that new. However, as someone still being employed on a full-time basis on one endeavour, it did challenge me to think about certain aspects of my life. The second section of the book is about redesigning your life and to think juggle. The idea here is to factor into your life the things that drive, inspire and interest you, then to figure out a way to get paid for it. And also to design a life where we segue seamlessly between work and play. The starting point for the redesign is perhaps not unsurprisingly to think about what we want our life to be like and then to dare to dream. For some, this may necessitate a complete overhaul, to hit life's Control-Alt-Delete key, as he puts it. For others, it may be more of a gradual change, adding in, removing or changing things that we do. One of the things that's really key, however, is that if you want to make a change to your life, it's to start doing something about it right now. And another is to recognise there's only one person who's going to bring about these changes, and that's you. You are the architect of your own destiny, as he puts it. Ian's obviously a talented guy with a number of diverse interests and bags of energy. And as he talks about his life, it sounds like a real whirlwind of activity as he moves from one work-related project to another, intermingling this with playing with his son and spending time with his wife and his friends, and it's these real no punctuation marks between work and play. I don't think this is the type of lifestyle that will be everybody's cup of tea. It's maybe a bit full on, or perhaps for some just not appealing at all. If it does appeal, however, I think the third and final section of the book describes a number of tactics you could employ to help create a juggling style of life. The first of these are about how you manage your time and where you focus your energies. And Ian suggests dividing up the various activities in your life into a number of projects, each with its own to-do list and timescales for completion of those. And all of this sounds like quite a lot of hard work in its own right. The antidote for all this frantic activity is to make sure you do take time out, switching off the phone, disconnecting the PC, and to develop techniques to de-stress before it all gets too much. And there are numerous other tactics in this section, all of which are quite short and easy to digest. This makes it easy to just dip in and dip out and look at the ones you fancy. In conclusion, I'd say if the portfolio type of lifestyle appeals to you, then I'd recommend you give this book a read. I liked its pragmatic approach, and it's unlikely you're going to get bored partway through, as you can do with some of the weightier tomes, due to the nice light style in which it's written. So it's called Juggle by Ian Sanders, and it's a bit of a snip at $9.99. So that's the review for this week. This is Uncle Spats for smallbizpod.net.
Well, thanks very much. Classic review, beautifully recorded, I think possibly in the garden. Thanks to Uncle Spats for that. It's smallbizpod.co.uk, of course. I don't actually have the domain smallbizpod.net, to my eternal shame. But there's quite an interesting podcast on American tax for small businesses if you're interested, at smallbizpod.net. So there we are. Always plug the competition, it's good. Now, on to this week's music. Nice summery vibe to this. It's from an album called We Believe by West Indian Girl, and the track is simply called Beach.